sake. Welcome to the Tarlows Den podcast, episode number 55. I'm Dan Wimbush, a frustrated Reading fan from Tilehurst. And in this humble abode, I'm joined by Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Very pleased to be here, Wim. We're just saying off air, weren't we? 1927, last semi-final, and you happen to book the next one they get into for your wedding, mate.
Yes, that expletive you heard at the top of the show was a carbon copy of my reaction when the announcement was made that Reading's FA Cup semi-final will be against Arsenal on Saturday, April the 18th, the day I exchange my vows with my lovely wife-to-be.
You're not going to do what my dad done then?
No, I'm not going to nip to Wembley afterwards. I don't think I'd survive.
No, I don't think you would. I don't know how he did, to be fair.
No, as that is one of the key things that we'll discuss, not my wedding, but the date of the semi-final, some ticket news and bits and pieces like that later in the show. Obviously, it's the main thing we're looking forward to now because, unfortunately, our league form hasn't received a boost from that cup win over Bradford. In fact, it was, unfortunately, business as usual, Westy. Reading going down 3-2 to defeat at Charlton. Even Simon Church managed to score.
I know, which is the final insult, really. Simon Church grabbing a goal against us. And I think I said off-air that probably last time he scored was when he played for us, which was probably about 6-7 years ago now, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I joke because he didn't celebrate his goal. And I said, well, he's probably forgotten how to celebrate.
Probably has, yeah. But it's disappointing. I think when McDermott was here, especially, we had a good cup run. It skated over the fact that in the league we were pretty poor. And it seems that that trend has continued because our league form is woeful when you look at it without the FA Cup. But with the FA Cup, I think people are just ignoring it at the moment.
Well, I said on Twitter that a 3-0 win over, let's be honest here, a 3-0 win over a League One side can't paper over the cracks of our recent league form.
No.
I think it's one win in six now. Again, we're starting to leak goals. If you look at the goals conceded on average per game, Steve Clark's side are getting right up there with Nigel Adkins. And if you took away that 6-1 defeat at Birmingham for Adkins, it would be level. So for all the talk that Clark sorted out the defence and got us playing a lot more solid, unfortunately it's gone back.
It's just pretty much the same as it was at the start of the season. It was nice to see a score a couple this week, but looking at the goals, there was some poor defending there. And I mean, Hector's one especially, where I think it was the second goal they scored.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done nothing to defend. He's just sort of walked by him and put a ball into the box and he's got his knee on it and put it in the top corner. It's not good enough. And I think the FA Cup has really been a distraction for everybody and it seems to be a distraction for the players at the moment.
Yeah, well, the early signs were pretty good. I mean, Reading only made one change. Chalobah's out injured, so he was replaced in the side by Norwood. They started well. They got a 1-0 lead. Pavel Pogrebniak scoring a goal. And you thought, okay, pretty solid. I think we had a few chances, had a lot of the ball, and you just thought, okay, they picked up where they left off. Maybe that win has given the confidence. But the second half, they fell to pieces. And Steve Clark didn't mince his words after the game. He said the second half performance wasn't good enough. I said Reading conceding three times in that second half. But he did say that the referee didn't help them. And looking at that penalty for Charlton's equaliser, a little bit harsher. Michael Hector gave a handball.
Yeah, I'd have been disappointed. I'd have been ecstatic if they'd have given it for us because it was really soft, wasn't it? I mean, it looks like he's got a push and it's hit him on the hands, has come in behind him.
As he's off balance, yeah.
He clearly can't see the ball and it's got to be deliberate handball. And not it's not deliberate handball in any for any intents and purposes because he's literally been pushed and it's hit him on the hands as he's gone over his head. I think it's a harsh penalty, but the referees give it at the end of the day. But it's not so much what's happened to them, it's how they're reacting to things going against them because after that, it's their head steam to drop and end up losing a match they probably should have won.
Yeah, it is very, very rare actually for Reading to take the lead in a game and completely capitulate like that. I think I'm right in saying we didn't lose a game the whole of last season when we took a lead, and I'm struggling to think of a game this season. Again, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is the first time we've actually lost a game when we've gone ahead.
Again, I don't think he can put his finger on it, which is more of a worry. I mean, if he's tried different combinations. Like I said, we were solid when he came in. They seem to open up a bit more now. Maybe in a pursuit of goals, so he wasn't scoring a great deal. And he's having the exact same problems that Adkins has, that he can't get them players to play all together as a team for 90 minutes.
Yeah, for me, it just goes back to what I wrote on the Tar List a few months ago. It's a team that's stale, it's lacking leaders. And when you do concede a goal, the heads drop and the mistakes creep back into the game. The second goal, just, again, people not picking up men. He strolls into the box and pops one past Federici. And the third one, as you mentioned, backing off. Cross across the box. And Church is not going to score many easier goals than that. And he did score a fair few easy ones for Reading this time.
Yeah, it was just poor all round. And like you said, there does seem to be a lack of leaders on the pitch. And we spoke about this pretty much all season. I mean, like I said, the FA Cup has really skated over the fact that people aren't really putting in 100% shift at the moment, unless it's an FA Cup match.
Yeah, and people say, well, why is it that these players can play in the FA Cup and they can't play in the league? And I'll put it this way. I think, again, they get motivated by the personal glory in those games. They're motivated by the fact of, oh, we can go to Wembley, I can make a name for myself.
Yeah.
When it comes to the league, when they've got to muck in for, let's be honest, it's not exactly covering yourselves in glory to say on your CV, oh, yeah, we stayed up in the Championship 1 year at Reading.
Yeah, but it's still not a guarantee they will stay up. It's only because the three teams at the bottom have been particularly poor this year that Reading are still quite a way out of trouble, but it can soon change. And if they don't start picking up the odd win here and there, they're going to be in it, I reckon, at the end of the season.
Yeah, what is it, 9 points now, to the gap to the bottom three. I think 13 points is the magic number that Reading either have to accumulate or teams have to drop for us to be mathematically safe. I think two wins and a draw games will do, and they've certainly got the teams in their running to do that. But like you said, the last thing you want to see is us to go into a bit of a tailspin after the international break, lose a couple of games, and then really have to be looking over our shoulders, because I said you want to put all your eggs in the FA Cup basket, and the easiest way to do that is to get your league business sorted.
Yeah, and it'd be nice to go into FA Cup semi-final knowing that, to be fair, we're pretty safe in the league as it is. But I think people will start taking interest in our league form because it's not been good, and the FA Cup, like I said at the start of the show, is skating over the fact that we've been poor.
Absolutely. Well, not much more to say about that. I said 3-2 defeat. Pavel Pogrebnyak grabbed a late consolation goal for a rare double. Don't often see Pav scoring twice.
No, and it's nice to see him. Don't often see him score two with his foot either. Yeah. He tends to score a lot of headers for someone who everyone says can't head a ball. But it's nice to see him get some goals. So I think he's been pretty good since Clark's come in.
Do you think Pog could ever be a 20-goal a season striker?
I think he could. I don't think he ever has been, has he, throughout his career? So
I think he's had one or two prolific spells, but not really.
I think he should, I've said before, he should be scoring 20 goals in the Championship. But has he got the players around him to create the sort of chances he's going to score goals from at the moment? Arguably, Murray did when he was here, so maybe he isn't.
Yeah, quite possibly. I said, so 3-2 defeat. Reading still 9 points clear of the drop zone, thanks to Wigan only drawing with Bolton. And Millwall really blowing a massive 2-0 lead at Brentford. That looked home and hosed, but
they look down, don't they, Millwall?
Yeah, obviously sat the manager recently in Holloway, and
It's only Wigan who might wriggle out of it, and even so, they've lost some of their good players, or most of their good players now, so they look like they're set for relegation, really.
Yeah, and they're blowing games that they need to win. I said they lost at home to Leeds the other week. I said they could only draw with Bolton, and these are the type of games you need to win.
They did turn over Rotherham, though, didn't they, recently?
Yeah, again, but the only teams that they're beating, they beat Reading, they beat Rotherham, and they beat Blackpool. Now, those are three of the easiest games you're going to get all season.
At the moment, yeah.
So you need to pick up all the points where you can, and it would be surprising to see them turn it around. I think Reading are safe. We've got a couple of questions in the mailbag about safety, and I would still be absolutely stunned. And you only need to look at the bookmakers, who aren't in the habit of losing money, to see how they rate our chance of going down.
I think the interesting question is, if you take the FA Cup out of it, how would you judge Clark at the moment? Because let's face it, they're not that good at the moment. Really. He hasn't turned anything round. We're pretty much on the same path we were before.
Well, I'll answer that question in the mailbag because someone has asked a very similar question. But I said that just about wraps up the Charlton game. I said just before we move on to our interview, I'll just quickly ask you, Weston, you weren't here last week.
No. Nope.
On that Bradford game, 3-0 win. I mean, we talked about it obviously on last week's show. You weren't here. Deserted us in our hour of need.
Sorry about that.
But what did you make of that win?
I thought it was a brilliant game. Of football. I thought it was probably the best atmosphere we've had at that club for quite some time, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, was it a spectacle of football? No, it wasn't, but it was nice to see, especially I thought Mackie was amazing, and I think his endeavour in these matches recently is what has got the crowd going, because he chases balls sometimes. I think, why are you running after that, Mackie? It's absolutely pointless. But what it does, it raises the crowd, and it makes the players around him do the same sort of thing. And I think he's been excellent over the last few weeks anyway, Mackie. And I just thought that the whole team put in a shift. But the more worrying thing for me when I come out of there is, if you could do it this week, why can't you do it consistently over the course of a season? Because I haven't been doing it.
Yeah, and that's something that we touched on earlier. So for me, the scoring the two goals early was perfect. Because how often have Reading been on top in the first 15, 20 minutes of a game this season? You thought, put away the chances. Like Simon Cox had those two against Nottingham Forest. He puts away those two goals against Forest. Yeah. No way Reading lose that game.
No. They just blew him out of the water, didn't they? First 10 minutes, they absolutely blew Bradford out of the water. And as soon as they had, Bradford players were looking around thinking, we've lost. And that's the attitude they took into the second half. Because again, Reading come out quite strong, I thought. And Bradford were never in the game. They never had a shot on goal, did they?
No, not at all. Right, as I said, we've got an interview to come with Simon Shepherd. But in the meantime, just time for a couple of quick news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. Well, only one story in town, really, for Reading fans, and that is the mad scramble for FA Cup tickets. They've gone on sale today. There is a full update of the day's proceedings up on the tarlhurstend.com, and by the time you hear this, it's probably changed, so I'm not going to tell you which tickets have sold and where, but the one thing I wanted to point out is the immense dedication of one Reading fan. I think her name was Teresa, who was at the Medici Stadium at 2 o'clock in the morning
to get her tickets. What is she thinking?
I don't know.
But it's basic maths. There's 31,000 tickets and 14,000 season ticket holders. She will get one.
She's just really keen, Westy.
It's just mental. Sorry. I'd love to say well done, but it's ridiculous.
I will say well done. I'm never going to criticise a fan for queuing up to get tickets to buy Reading. Fair play to you, but I would just love to hear the reasoning. I just want to know.
Thing is, Wim, I even moan about people who queue up for the next sales. You know what I mean? They're there at like 5 in the morning in a tent to get a T-shirt. Why bother? You know what I mean? Is it that important?
Yeah, well, Teresa, if you're listening, we would love to hear why you were there so early. But credit to you, she's got a ticket, I presume. Unless she fell asleep.
Well, you would hope so. And if she hasn't, she could have mine for that sort of dedication. But still, it's lunacy.
Yeah, I mean, some Reading fans are not happy at the way the tickets are going on sale and talking about the level of royalty points and bits and pieces like that. Any complaints from you?
The only complaint I've got is, obviously I'm a season ticket holder, my dad is. But my boys, although they're members, they're not season ticket holders. So they are only young, so they wouldn't have accumulated enough points to be able to sit with me if I were going to buy my season ticket first, if you know what I mean. So I'd have to wait. But the thing is, they haven't got 300 points. But they go, but they're only young. So that is the only thing I can say. So I can't logistically get a seat with them and my dad and all sit together. And that's the only thing I would say about it. But again, we've all got our gripes and whinges about it. But at the end of the day, if you've got the loyalty points, then you deserve to go. It's just the only thing I would say is if you're a young fan, it's going to be very difficult for you to get a ticket.
Yeah, and Royal Hoops has written a really nice piece up on the tarlhurstend.com that you can read now. He's in a position where he's been working part-time, he's been away, and he's not picked up the royalty points, despite, you know, being someone that's obviously very keenly interested in the club, writes for us and has written for us ever since the website started. And again, he just sort of said, well, look, like you said, I haven't got the points. Other people have been putting in the time and effort to go to games, and they have got them.
Yeah.
So, again, it's not a perfect system. If you want to have a look at how complicated it could be, head over to that piece and just take a look in the comments section. I posted Aston Villa selling criteria, and Westy, it is the biggest load of malarkey and ridiculous schedule you'll ever see. They have split it into different times of the day. They've split it into season ticket holders who've attended three games, four games.
But how are you going to police that? You know what I mean?
It's ridiculous.
You're not going to be able to police it.
It's ridiculous. And the very fact that Reading have got over 30,000 tickets does mean that everybody who has been seriously supporting the side over the past few seasons should get a ticket.
No, that's right. They should get a ticket, and that's fair, I suppose. It's the only fair way you can do it. The only thing I would say is if you had a season ticket holder and you had a child under 16, I think you should be able to get two tickets.
Yeah, certainly.
Arguably.
Yeah.
But that's only for my own selfishness, I suppose.
Well, no. I agree. I mean, it's very difficult. As I said, if they've not been around to build up those royalty points, they can't go. But I said, hopefully everyone will be sorted. I said, it's over 30,000 tickets, folks. I can't, I mean, you remember the panic scramble we had for the Bradford away game? People started panicking. Oh, am I going to get my tickets? We didn't sell out for a good couple of weeks, did we?
There was a panic scramble for the Swansea game as well. And I think we had something like 4,000 tickets left and they were giving them away in the end. Yeah, there'd be plenty of tickets for everyone.
Yeah, it's the magic if we get to the final that it will really come to the squeeze. Because I think teams get about 22, 23,000 tickets.
Yeah. But again, they go to season ticket holders. That's 14,000 gone straight away if they all want to go. I'm not sure everyone goes anyway. I mean, obviously,
I think everyone would go.
You think most would?
Yeah. Someone is technically in my season ticket seat for the FA Cup semi final. So the amount of offers and requests I had for said season ticket was unbelievable.
He's been a very popular man recently.
Yeah, my plight receiving plenty of attention. And, yeah. people very quick to shotgun those tickets. So no, anybody who's thinking of asking me, unfortunately,
it's gone.
I promised it to another. But yeah, I'm praying we get through to the final. I'll have my two cents on this whole wedding thing. I've not been shy about having a little bit of a moan on Twitter, and please forgive me, folks. I've been a Reading fan for 20 years. My very first game was seeing us lose in the FA Cup 3-1 at home to Oldham in 95. So I started my journey in the FA Cup, and now it comes to it 20 years later, and I just picked the wrong date. I can't even say that I picked this date was picked before these dates were even announced for the semi-finals. And I remember joking at the start of the season, I said, oh, Reading are going to Rotherham that day. Picked a great day. But
the thing is, Wim, it all depends how you want to sell it, okay? From your own personal point of view, you're thinking, I've missed the semi-final. But to your betrothed, she's thinking, he so loves me that he will give up a semi-final ticket to marry me.
Yeah.
That is the way you've got to sell it, mate. Trust me.
Well, we're getting married at 2:30. The game obviously doesn't kick off till 5. A lot of people said, I'll set up a TV in the reception. I'm like, I don't want to see it. If I can't be there, I don't want to spend an hour, possibly up to 2.5 hours of my wedding day watching this game.
It is a risky old game you're playing doing that, mate.
So, yeah, we'll see. All I've said is that for you 31,000 fans that are heading there, please back the boys, make the noise, and just make sure we win. Is that so much to ask?
Yeah, that's not too much to ask.
No, just beat Arsenal. Yeah. Easy. Absolutely easy.
It'd be easier in the final then.
Yeah. I mean, I asked this question to the guys last week. Do you give Reading much of a chance?
No, I don't give them no hope.
No hope whatsoever?
No. I can't see them getting anywhere near Arsenal on a big pitch like that on a big day. Big time players. Any hope Reading have got, I think, is if they stick everyone behind the ball and try and play it out for the whole extra time and penalties. That's the only way I can see Reading going through.
Or some sort of lucky early red card.
Yeah, or just a fluke. Even a red card, I still think it'd be us for 10 men. I just think maybe a fluky goal and hold on. I remember when I was playing pub football, it was a bit different, obviously, but we played a team called the Lamb Inn, and they hadn't lost for 3 seasons.
Is that the Lamb Inn Thiel?
Yeah. They hadn't lost for 3 seasons, and they played us, and we went down to 10 men in the first 10 minutes because someone got some mud in their eye.
Did you throw it?
No. Right, so we had 10 men against 11, and they had lost for 3 months, and we had a fluky free kick that flew in over this giant of a goalkeeper, come off someone's foot, and we held on for 80 minutes, and they wouldn't even shake our hand at the end of the game. And if it goes that way, I'll take it. But I just can't see him getting very much.
No, I said you don't give Reading much of a chance, but then you don't give teams that cause these cup upsets any chance. Anything can happen on the day. Do you know what the funny thing for me is? I don't want Reading to go in front early. Because I think if Reading go in front early, it wakes up Arsenal. Yeah.
Well, let's face it, we went 4-0 up against them not so long ago. We still can beat them, so...
Well, we'll see how that one goes. As I said, April the 18th, mark it in your calendars, folks, as if you haven't already.
Yeah.
And we'll look forward to that. And obviously, we'll have plenty more build-up closer to that game. Just one of the main bit of news to report on, and that is the international call-ups.
So
we're in an international break, Wesley, after all these Saturday, Tuesday.
Did anyone notice?
No, I did, because simply I'm not building up or reacting to a game.
No.
We've, you know, we love doing what we do on the Tyler SM, but it was getting to a bit of a grind where literally every single day we're either building up or reacting to a game. Thankfully, we've got a break now for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Everyone off on international duty, you can all look forward to seeing England play. Who have they got? Is it Lithuania?
Yes, glamour-tized,
I can't even remember who it is.
This is what I'm saying. Did anyone notice?
No. Plenty of Reading players getting international call-ups. Adam Federici's off with Australia. You've got Chris Gunter and Hal Robson-Cadieux off with Wales. For the Republic for Northern Ireland, you've got Oliver Norwood. Alex Pearce is with the Republic of Ireland. Gareth McLeary's going off with Jamaica. Danny Williams has earned a recall to the USA side, which is nice to see.
Yeah, that's a good one.
He obviously missed the World Cup with that injury.
They got a good side as well, USA. Looks good players.
Hope Akpan's off with Nigeria. Aaron Cool is with the England under-19s, which again is nice to see. Chalobah was in the under-21s, but he pulled out due to injury. Got a few other players dotted around the other youth side as well. Ryan Edwards is with the Australia under-23s, playing Uno this morning, according to his Instagram.
Was he?
Yeah, the glamorous lifestyle that the players lead.
It goes to show how far Reading have come when we've got so many internationals, even at young level, because... I mean, when I was a kid, if we had one, it was a big
Jimmy
deal.
Jimmy Quinn going off in Northern Ireland was a big deal.
It was a massive deal.
So yeah, lots of players going off around it. There is a full roundup again on thetylerson.com if you're interested in that. But just hope they come through it with no injuries, really. I'm sure Hal Robson-Cadieux put in another great shift for Wales.
He looked like a world beater for Wales.
Yeah, or on the telly.
Probably.
Anyway, sorry, folks. Can't go a whole podcast without mentioning Hal Robson-Cadieux.
We had nothing to slate about Robson-Cadieux this week, so we found something.
Yeah, we found something. Well, I could have didn't even mention him in the Charlton game because he didn't do anything.
No.
But yeah, so that is that's just about the news for this week. So with that being said, it's time to move on to our interview. It is with former Reading goalkeeper Simon Shepherd. He played for the club from 1994 to 1996. This was recorded during last week's show, so I think you might hear Handbags' voice a couple of times. Really interesting interview. Again, some of our younger listeners probably won't know his name. Obviously, he played for Reading nearly 20 years ago, and I think he only made sort of best part of 15 appearances for the club. But, you know, he was the man that came just after Shaka Hislop, played in the last Reading team to play at the old Wembley in the 95 playoff final. He was on the bench, the only sub not used that day. And a rare case, Westy, of a player that went straight, basically, from playing Championship football, as it was then, or the old, but not that old, First Division,
yeah,
to non-league football. So some interesting comments here. I said, take the time to listen, and we'll join you on the other side.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, interview time. And this week, I'm delighted to say I'm joined by a man who played for Reading during one of our most successful periods. He was a goalkeeper on the bench on the last time we played at the old Wembley. Is Simon Shepherd. Simon, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You're over in America now. You're a goalkeeping coach at Sacramento Republic, is that right?
That's correct.
Excellent. And we'll get to that bit of your career just shortly, but we'll start at the start then. Obviously, you're a professional footballer, but what was your earliest footballing memory?
Well, I was very lucky because I was part of the Lillishaw England National Soccer School. So from the age of 14, I was obviously at Lillishaw being coached by Dave Sexton and those types of people. And so I was very lucky. From a very young age, I was surrounded by the best coaches at the time. And so for me, you know, I was very fortunate. I went to Wembley quite a few times with the England youth team. So those were my best moments, and probably obviously the first time being at Wembley as an England schoolboy and beating Brazil 1-0, which obviously doesn't happen very often. So having that as one of my main memories would be the first great memory for me.
Lovely. Your first professional club then was Watford. How did that signing come about? Were you with Watford from an early age?
Yeah, absolutely. Going to Lillishaw, I was very fortunate that I was able to. I had a lot of clubs looking at me at that time, and Watford was one of those progressive clubs that was very interested in bringing the youth through into the first team. So for me, that was one of the big things for me, because obviously the most important thing as a youth is you want to play in the first team, and I was very lucky. I was able to do that at a young age.
What do you remember about your debut? Who was it against, and what was the score?
Oh, well, we won. I was lucky. It was at Vicarage Road, and we played Wolverhampton Wanderers. That was the old Steve Ball days. So luckily, Bully didn't get one on that day on me. So it was good. But he definitely gave me a good stamp on the foot, rightly, with the first corner. So, you know, it was a great moment playing, you know, playing for the club that you came through the youth ranks with, and winning 3-1. It really doesn't get any better.
Absolutely. And during that time as well, as you mentioned, you're with the England setup squad. Is it right that you went to the International Youth Games in 93, and you were captained by another man who had gone on to play for Reading, Darren Caskey? What did you remember at that time?
Well, Darren Caskey actually was at Lillishaw with me as well. So I knew Darren from the England days anyway, out at Lillishaw. So when he came to Reading, it was great. He was a good driving partner. There was a big group of us at that time. There was like four of us. I think it was like myself, Lee Nogan, Darren Caskey, and Trevor Morley. So we were lucky. We had a good car, a good laugh on the way down to training.
No, lovely stuff. And from that, I said you spent the first sort of three or four years of your professional career at Watford, made a handful of appearances, just under 20, and then you made the move to Reading. How did the move to Elm Park come about?
Well, that all came about through Colin Lee, because Colin Lee was my youth team coach over at Watford at the time, and Colin was in contact with me about, you know, they obviously only had Shaka at that time, so they needed a second goalkeeper, and that's when Colin reached out to me, and I was getting some games at that time under Steve Perryman, so he and obviously having that little bit of experience helped. So and Colin obviously knew me as a young kid, so that kind of helped. helped me as well. So that's how it all came about.
What are your memories of that season? Obviously, Reading did fantastically well. Finished, it was our highest ever league place to that point. Came second in the league. Got all the way to Wembley for the playoff final. Unfortunately for yourself, obviously, you know, Xhaka was in phenomenal form. And what was it like working with Xhaka and just the general vibe around the club at that time?
Oh, I mean, it was fantastic. And, you know, if anybody remembers it, it was an amazing season. Something that I think even the Reading fans, you know, still look back on and dream about, that, you know, we can, you know, sort of get into that position again for the club. And for me, it was great. Obviously, Xhaka was a great guy. You know, obviously, I learned a lot. I knew I was coming in to be the number two. And I was happy with that, because remember, I was only young at that stage. You know, I was only, what, 21, 22 at that stage. I mean, in this day and age, you know, that's very young for a goalkeeper.
Absolutely. And any particular memories stand out from that year, other than obviously Wembley?
Sure, of course. I mean, you know, for me, you know, playing at Elm Park was great, because that was obviously I believe that was one of the last years that we were actually at Elm Park.
Yeah.
And a very historical moment there as well. And, you know, playing for the club at the first game you ever play, it's always that memorable moment, and then also the last one as well that you play, you'll always remember it. And I was very fortunate that Michael Jilks actually had a testimonial game as well that all the boys came back for, and that was a nice memorable one as well. So.
Yeah, as you mentioned, obviously Xhaka moved on in that summer. The squad was really broken up after getting so close to the Premier League. Xhaka moved on to Newcastle. That left you with the gloves, and you lined up at the start of the season. But I think it's safe to say it didn't go exactly to plan. I think you picked up an injury as well at one point, and I think Reading ended up using something silly like 6 or 7 goalkeepers.
That's right.
End of that year.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's a record as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a quiz question we're going to have to do one day if you can name them all. But I mean, what for you, obviously, you got your chance, and as I said, it didn't go quite to plan. What were your memories of that time, and what ultimately didn't work out for you?
Well, I think the big thing, especially like being in the role that I'm in right now, remember, I was only like 23 years old, you know, I was young. You know, and one thing that I've learned more than anything of what didn't happen as much was the education, was the coaching behind it all, you know. And it's not just the coaching on the field, it's the coaching off the field. And there's more and more of that that needs to go on that makes players better. You know, you don't just go out there and play. You obviously have the ability to play. It's about what you do with them behind the scenes. And that's one thing, especially in the role that I'm in, where I'm now working with young players. You know, you have to work with them, not on their mental side of their game. And I think during those days, that's not really was one of those focuses. You know, it was more about winning games and which obviously it always is. But what you do with the player off the field is just as important what you do on the field. And at that time, we were obviously going through different management as well. You know, new management that wasn't given that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I said you were quite unfortunate. Said it was a baptism of fire, and I remember unfortunately there were a couple of mistakes, and I was quite young at the time, but I remember seeing it did look a lonely time for you. I said there was no place to hide, and I said it couldn't have helped your confidence having a series of goalkeepers coming. I remember Bobby Mikhailov came in.
Yeah. Nicky Hammond came in.
Nicky Hammond.
Jimmy Quinn won in goal for one bit, didn't he? I think it was the game he broke your arm.
Yes, I did. From. I think that was the big thing, because I think we played Manchester United the following day. So that was one of the not the following day, the following week. I think I was like a week away from playing against United, which, you know, you obviously look back on as one of those things that never happened. But, you know, I think that you're there to be tested, you know, and whether no matter how old you are, you know, you got to rise above it. And, you know, it's definitely helped me moving forward in my career when, you know, obviously as a coach now.
Yeah, I think one of the more memorable moments was an off the field incident. I think, am I right in saying that you had a spanner thrown at you from Millwall fans.
That was good old Millwall fans. Yeah, that was another memorable moment. Yeah. And I mean, at the time, I wasn't even really thinking about it. But looking back on it, I think if you did hit me, I think I probably wouldn't be here talking to you today. So, obviously, things have definitely changed. It was a pretty big spanner. And I believe the guy was like 15 or 16 years old from Millwall. So, I don't like to say part of the game because that's kind of an old cliche thing to say, but something that is very unusual that that happened, of course, and one that I'm glad I haven't seen again, you know?
Absolutely. Well, as I said, your Reading career didn't go to plan. I think you left the club that I think it was either in the summer or earlier the following year. You had a couple of stops in non-league, but Reading was your last league club. I mean, as you said, for someone with your background, obviously going through the England ranks, playing football at a very early age for Watford and then Reading, I mean, what happened? Was it a conscious choice for you to sort of step away from the professional game, or was it just circumstance? I mean, what sort of happened in the years?
I think the circumstances, and being a goalkeeper, it's always tough because a lot of clubs, they do have their goalkeepers set. So you're looking for an injury, or you're looking for a move. You're looking for something to shake out so that you get an opportunity to get back in. And quite honestly, I mean, I didn't really know this at the time, but I think it was probably the best thing that actually happened to me, because it definitely makes you appreciate what you have. And it's not like that I didn't appreciate what I had, but it gets you to refocus your priorities and really sort of look at, you know, how the game is very different from the pro game to the amateur game. But it also gave me an opportunity, because remember, I've been kind of institutionalized in a way from the age of sort of 14 years old to be around the professional game. So when that then wasn't an option, I was able to, you know, finally, you know, get into an office and start doing some work as well as playing on the side. So it was kind of the best of both worlds. But I do know, I do remember consciously in my head, when I decided to make the transfer over to California, it was pretty straightforward. I was burnt out. I was done. And so I was kind of happy to get away.
Yeah. What age did you move over there? So what was the immediate transition then from stepping away from the game in England to ending up in America?
Yeah. I mean, basically, what happened was I actually started working for Adecco Employment Services. And at the time they were the largest temp agency in the world. And I got a great opportunity to move to San Francisco and work in one of the local branches here, and just carrying on the great work that I was doing in the corporate headquarters in Boreham Wood. So I was very lucky that Adecco gave me that opportunity and gave me an opportunity to come to California. And so for me, it was great that I could actually get away and do the stuff that typically I wasn't allowed to do, you know, riding motorcycles and snowboarding and things like that, which, you know, we obviously aren't allowed to do when we're professional athletes.
Sounds like you would have gotten well with a future Reading goalkeeper, Marcus Hanneman.
Yeah.
For that sort of thing as well. But then, so what led you then back to football? As I said, you're now a goalkeeping coach with Sacramento. Did they reach out to you? Did you go to them? How did that one come
about? Yeah, basically, I had actually started my own goalkeeping. I actually had my daughter, and I was a stay-at-home dad for a long time. And, you know, I actually got invited out to come and just try and work with some kids. They found out about my background. And it just basically started from there. All of a sudden, you know, I was doing doing private personal sessions on the side, working with local kids in the area, and got myself a reputation around here for, you know, local teams, and then started working with a Granite Bay club in the area, and coached some teams and did stuff like that. And then last season, the Sac Republic came in, and when they said that they were going to start this, that really sort of got my juices flowing again for the professional game again. And that's why I kind of reached out. And at that time, it was kind of, they were looking just to try and form some sort of, you know, we started with nothing. We had, I remember going into the first like three or four you know, 3 or 4 weeks of them actually officially coming out, we had like 3 or 4 players. We had 0 players. So from there, it was great. You know, I got an opportunity to really look at some great goalkeepers. And last season, I was very fortunate to work with Jake Gleeson, who came from the Portland Timbers and also is a New Zealand international. I managed to help him through and managed to have an unbelievable season.
Yeah, you guys finishing high up in the league. I'm right in saying that the league that you're in at the moment is it right? It's the third tier in the States,
it's the second tier. It's kind of like MLS and then USL. The USL right now it's definitely taken a lot of transitions. It's looking, you have a lot of, there's no reserve league over here for the MLS teams. So what they're starting to do is starting to incorporate a lot of the reserve teams into this league, so it is becoming a stronger league, and it's definitely a feeder for the MLS for sure.
Yeah, the MLS is receiving a lot of attention over here. Obviously, a lot of big names heading over there, like Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard. They've just signed a deal with Sky Sports, and more people than ever are able to actually watch it. I mean, what is the standard like? You've obviously seen it develop over the past few years. If you were comparing it to the sort of standard in England, what sort of stage do you think it's reached now?
The MLS?
Yeah.
I think the MLS is really, the MLS has really been established by David Beckham. I mean, David Beckham has been phenomenal for the sport over here in the US. I mean, more kids are playing it than ever over here, and it's definitely the up and rising sport for every kid to play. And I'd probably say, you know, the standard is definitely getting better because of the influx of more European players. And I'll probably say it's definitely around the championship to the first division level. I think it's, depending on each team, because, of course, it's all about, unfortunately, how much money you've got, what you've got, how you can bring players in, can you afford to bring them in, and everything else. But it's definitely growing.
Absolutely. And what about yourselves and your team's prospect for this season? How are you shaping up?
Well, we're looking good. We're looking good right now. Obviously, you know, first season in, we win the league. Nobody expected us to do that. You know, highest attendance. I mean, we have more season tickets than the Sacramento Kings, which is the NBA team here.
Wow.
We literally just played a friendly several weeks ago, and we got 20,000 people show up, and we could have sold another 10. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. The city here is just really taken on the Sac Republic here. So we're extending our stadium every year. We're actually having to delay our home opener because our stand's not going to be ready. So a lot of people are coming. So it's great for the city.
Fantastic. It was great when you're delaying because you've got too many fans rather than not enough. A couple of questions then before we let you go. And thanks very much for your time again. I'll start with, are there any players from your Reading days you're still in contact with? Anybody that you still keep in touch with?
When you're in the game, it's kind of hard not to, I think I'm keeping more in contact more with the Watford guys.
Yeah.
Because I was there a lot longer. Reading, obviously, there was a lot of turnover and players coming and going a lot more. But definitely from the Watford days, I've been, Darren Baisley is actually in, he's with the New Zealand under 20 team. So that was always great because obviously I had Jake that I was always, he was always asking about him. So it was great. And then I actually came back over last Easter and went up and watched a couple of training sessions with Kenny Jackett and Joe Gallen, who I also played with up in with Watford. So it's been great. I keep in touch with people as I can, but it's tough. I'm over here in California and there's a bit of a time difference.
Yeah, it's all right. Most of them are radio pundits now anyway. Ady Williams and Mick Goodin are on BBC Radio Berkshire every week, so you can keep in touch with them.
So you can't get away from it.
Absolutely. And then just finally, obviously you're a busy man, you've got plenty on, but Reading, since you've left, we've been in the Premier League a couple of times. I said just last night reaching our first FA Cup semi-final for years. What have you made of the progress of the club on and off the field since you left?
Well, I think it's been, I mean, especially for me, like I said, I mean, they were moving from Elm Park. So whenever you're moving into a new stadium, it was always going to be tough. And I thought they weathered it very, very well. And I think overall, I think Reading have, you know, it's obviously a score I always look out for and I'm always interested in. And I think Reading, I mean, overall, that they've got a now a great, good foundation. And at the end of the day, like all clubs, it's about progressing. It's about building on what you've got. And in this day and age, it is always going to be about your youth and bringing good young players through. Because, you know, these big clubs obviously have the money that they can just go and buy anybody. And I think it's great for Reading that they've really established themselves very well and keeping themselves in, you know, the highest tier that they can and keep pushing for the Premier League again. And I'm sure that's what all the Reading fans want, is to get back in the big time again.
Absolutely. Well, Simon said, thank you very, very much for giving us your time. Best of luck with the season, and we'll follow the Sacramento's progress carefully over the next year or so.
Thank you very much, Dan.
Take care, Simon.
Time, guys. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter.
At The Tarlhurst End.
And facebook.com/ The Tarlhurst End.
Right, a massive thank you to Simon for that interview and to the Sacramento Republic for helping us set that up. Never easy setting up a transatlantic interview, but again, massive thanks to Simon for taking time out in their busy schedule. Sacramento played their first game of the season, Westie. They unfortunately lost to the Seattle Sounders' second team. So the Tarlhurst End podcast effect rubs off again.
Yeah, it's a worldwide effect.
But we'll pull the camera back. We've just gone straight to recording this after our last segment, so you haven't heard the interview itself. But what are your memories of Simon's time with the Royals?
Let's say he had a tough act to follow, because Chaka Rislop was a great goalkeeper. But I was saying to you off air there, I said Simon Shepherd was worth the entrance fee alone, because you can never fault his endeavour. It was just, unfortunately for him, for a young goalkeeper, he made a few mistakes early. And that can damage anyone's confidence. And it was, he used to make some brilliant saves, but it was just his basic goalkeeping used to frighten everybody. And I think I said to you off air as well, I said the irony of when he did catch a ball, the crowd's relief was audible. And again, that couldn't have helped him. But like I say, you can never fault his endeavour. And I remember once he got man of the match, I think it was at Leicester, when we won 1-0. And he made some great saves that day. But I think the reporter said, I can't believe he kept a clean sheet. So what did that tell you? I don't know.
Yeah, again, he was clearly a man who had a lot of talent. You don't go through the England developmental setup and play for your country if you don't. And I think it's really interesting, and it shows how the game has changed. Obviously, he touched a lot on the mental aspect of the game and the sort of lack of support that was around the time. And, you know, as I mentioned before the interview, for a footballer to go from playing for a championship side and playing for England to completely out of the game within 2 years.
Not only that, the side that he played in goal for wasn't the side that was in the playoffs the year before. That team was decimated, and I think they just managed to stay up that year. I think they just stayed in the league that year and got relegated the year after, if my memory serves me correct.
I think
correct.
It was 2 years after, but both years they were fighting relegation.
But yeah, once that playoff team broke up, then it was a shadow of his former team. And like I said, confidence is key in any position, but especially in goal. And I think he had a few big hits early doors, and it just amazes me how a goalkeeper who clearly had the talent to be a good goalkeeper, else he wouldn't have got that gig as early as he did, can slip down so fast, so quick, because it doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, and
it rarely happens.
You know, I'm a goalkeeper. Obviously, play nowhere near the level of. Well, actually, I've probably put in some better performances than Simon did. Bless him. I'm sure he'll be the first to admit that. But you know, I'm a goalkeeper, and even at five-a-side level, I know how awful it feels if you make a gaff. And it's so hard to come back from that, because it's on your mind. You play the next week. Oh, God. Hope I don't make that same mistake again. No. And if that happens again, you just...
And not only that, people remind you.
Yeah.
It was that guy, I think it was his name, was it Tbilisi or someone like that? He played for...
Taibbi.
Played for Man United. Yeah. And then obviously he was clearly a good goalkeeper. They paid a lot of money for him. And I think his debut, or his second game, he let that ball go through his legs and he made a load of howlers. And his confidence just drained out of him.
Yeah.
And it can ruin your career.
The tough thing as well for a goalkeeper is that... When you're an outfield player, you make a cock-up. You can run after the ball, go and do something and build yourself back into the game.
And to a certain extent, you can get away with it.
Yeah, but you can get yourself back in the game. You can make up for it. As a goalkeeper, you're at the mercy of the opposition.
Yeah.
The opposition have one shot and score that one goal when it goes through your legs. Mm. That's it. You're basically left waiting until the next week.
Yep.
And again, then you're letting it play on your mind a week. You haven't just got it straight out of your head, oh, I've made that save.
Yep.
And that's why sometimes goalkeepers, I think sometimes these goalkeepers that play for lower league teams in the Premier League look better. You look at people like Ben Foster, Rob Green. I think they're often made to look better than they are because they're getting so peppered with shots week in, week out.
Yeah.
And then when they go to bigger sides, like obviously you had Rob Green on the international stage with England, even people like David James playing for Liverpool, Ben Foster at Man United.
Yep.
They go to these teams where actually they're not that busy and the spotlight's on them when they do have a big chance against them and they can crumble.
I mean, that's the key as well. The higher you go, the bigger the spotlight and the bigger the mistake, because it will be on the back papers, it will be all over the place. Match of the day, people can comment on it for 3 or 4 weeks. The lower you are, you might make the odd mistake, people won't notice it so much. But for Simon especially, it's just their odd mistakes early doors. And people forget what a young goalkeeper he was. He wasn't 30, coming up to 35. He was young and he should have been allowed to make some mistakes. And he clearly, once he left Reading, he wasn't, and he slipped down the knee.
Yeah, but as I said, it was a really nice story to hear that he got back in the game, discovering, you know, love again and working with good goalkeepers. And I said, best of luck to Sacramento, and thanks again to Simon for his time. We'll try and pop that interview up on YouTube and maybe get some quotes up on the website. Can't promise anything. I still need to work up that Simon Osborne interview from a few months ago. So we'll see how that one goes. But as I said, thank you very much to Simon. Time now then to move on to the mailbag then. And again, thanks to all of you who've got in touch this week. Not a bad mailbag actually this week. I was expecting...
A surprisingly good mailbag.
Yeah, I was expecting not a lot given the result. But as I said, we've lost, so...
Yeah, I think it was, like I said, everyone's concentrating on the FA Cup.
And we'll start with a tweet that relates to Simon Shepherd. Not particularly Simon Shepherd actually, but he says... Mark Mayo says, I'll ask you, who is the best Reading FC keeper you've seen play?
What, for Reading?
I believe so, yeah.
The best goalkeeper I've seen play for Reading was Jim Leighton.
Really?
I know that'd be a surprise to some people, and a lot of people would never have heard of him. But he was a Man United goalkeeper. I think I mentioned it before. He was Man United's goalkeeper, and he had a few incidents for Man United where he made gaffes and he made mistakes.
Did he get dropped for something like a Cup Winners Cup final or an FA Cup final?
He
did. That.
He was Scottish goalkeeper. He was Scottish number one. Brilliant goalkeeper he was, but he made some mistakes in big games and he got bombed out and he ended up coming to Reading on loan. And he was absolutely top-level, brilliant goalkeeper. I mean, I don't know how well he would have coped in today's football because his footballing skills weren't great. But his goalkeeper, old-fashioned goalkeeping, he was brave as a lion. He made some brilliant saves. I think we played against Swansea. I think it was the same game that Steve Archibald played for us as well. It's an old name for some people who might remember him. His player played for Barcelona. And we won 1-0, but he made three saves on the bounce at a... Wow, you wouldn't believe it if you see it. It was unbelievable goalkeeping. And from that position, he left Reading. I think he went on to play for Hearts and his career sort of had an upward swing again. But yeah, he was the best goalkeeper I've seen play for Reading.
I can't look past Xhaka.
Yeah, and Xhaka was brilliant as well. Yeah.
Just the way Xhaka, he used to make the goal look so small.
Yeah. But Xhaka, when Xhaka first come into the team, my mate used to call him Xhaka Slip Slop because everything he come for, he used to drop or miss. So it took Xhaka probably a good 6-8 months to become the goalkeeper he did. And his rise was very quick. And like I say, it was a confidence thing. And he was a brilliant goalkeeper.
Just dominant. I think he played every game for Reading for two straight seasons.
Yeah, I think the first season, the season we come second, I think he probably got us 30, 35 points because his goalkeeping was brilliant. Yeah,
He had it all. Great shot stopper. I don't remember his distribution, but I remember he had a bit of a booming throw.
Yeah, he could throw it a long way.
Yeah, and obviously he got a massive move. It was Reading's record sale at the time when he moved to Newcastle and went on to have a long career in the Premier League.
He was, I think, he was the most expensive goalkeeper in the country at the time when they bought him.
Yeah, he was on the verge of getting a call-up for England. I think he got as far as the... I don't know if he played for England B or an under-23 side, something like that. But he ended up obviously playing for Trinidad and Tobago against England at the World Cup.
And again, when Xhaka went to Newcastle, he made a few mistakes and soon got bombed out. I think who was in goal there? I can't remember. Polish goalkeeper.
Cernicek.
Yeah, he went back in goal after probably 6-8 months. So again, it just goes to show you, a few mistakes as a goalkeeper and it can be quite easy to lose your confidence.
Yeah, and we've been blessed with a lot of good goalkeepers since then. Obviously, current number one, Adam Federici, I think would be in the discussion for probably top five, maybe not top one.
We've had some good goalkeepers. I mean, when
Marcus
Hanneman. Some of the older listeners, they remember Steve Deff, tiny goalkeeper, but really good. I see him play probably twice because I was too little to see him play at his peak. But everyone who'd seen him play says what a great goalkeeper he was. Steve Francis was in goal when I was a kid. Another good goalkeeper. Not very much talked about, but he was a good goalkeeper. And we've been blessed with some good goalkeepers over the years.
Yeah, I said Marcus Hanneman. And even more recently, I think Alex McCarthy's still got the potential. I think it's really got a sting, Westy, seeing Rob Green called into the England squad ahead of you, if you're Alex McCarthy.
How? I don't think he's covered himself in too much glory.
I think Roy Hodgson just likes having that experienced goalkeeper behind Joe Hart.
Yeah. Maybe. Again, I didn't think it really matters who's two and three, because there's only one goalkeeper going to get the place, and they normally stay in goal for 10, 12 years.
Yeah, disappointing. I really hoped that McCarthy would have got a run by now, but credit to Rob Green. I suppose he's playing well, but you question that career move from McCarthy, because he's going to be back in the Championship next season.
Yeah, bad move for him. Is that what we're saying at the moment?
Yeah, well, I don't know what his wage package is like.
No, but he would have played here, wouldn't he? He'd have been here
every week. Playing every week. Mm. But obviously Reading needed the money, and I presume that if they do get relegated, Rob Green will either, I don't know, Premier League club might take another punt on him to be an experienced backup or something.
He's still young enough to come back from that.
Absolutely. Right, Royal Hoops. Which of the Reading FC first team drink the most coffee?
What a random question.
Royal Hoops is the same man that obviously put to us the who's the hottest member of the Reading side and who's got the hottest wife.
Okay.
And also, this is his thing now. He likes to throw these curveballs at us.
Drink the most coffee.
I'm going to say Jem Carrotan, because he just never seems to stop moving.
Mm.
And we didn't mention Jem, actually. He came on again at Charlton and got half an hour in, so that was good to see.
Mackie?
Yep, I like that.
Yeah, I think we'll go with that.
Yep. Hope that answers your question, Hoops. Need to try harder. Mark Sugar, regular tweeter into the show. Thanks again, Mark.
Coffee, then sugar.
Good link. That's what you've done there. He says, why are the more recently relegated Premier League sides such as ourselves, Fulham and Wigan, all struggling? Westy, any thoughts?
Good question. I think, again, Fulham have struggled from the beginning. At least we had a punter going back up, and so did Wigan last year. Fulham's been a surprise to me, because I thought they'd be well at the top. But I did mention Fulham when they first come down early in the season. They did have quite a small team. Looked quite weak for a Championship football side, and it's proved that way, because they looked like they weren't really going to be up for a physical battle, which it is in the Championship.
Well, they went feast and famine, didn't they? They had a lot of Premier League players that left, and they basically stuck all their eggs. They bought in Smith and McCormack, and had a lot of really exciting academy players that had reached the FA Youth Cup final, obviously beaten Reading the year before. So they basically went with a few stars and a load of potential, and the mix just didn't work.
No.
You know, you had Scott Parker playing alongside people like Corley Woodrow and players like that, and the balance just wasn't there.
I think Fulham, do you remember when they got relegated a few years ago when Kevin Keegan was in charge of them? And what he'd done, he just basically filled that team with probably 12, 13 pretty decent Premier League footballers. Albert, I think, was there at the time. He joined them, and they had a core of 12, 13 top, well, not top Premier League footballers, but decent Premier League footballers, and they went straight back up and they absolutely blitzed it. Whereas it looks like now Fulham have gone for maybe two or three decent or top Championship lower Premier League footballers and a load of youngsters. It's clearly not worked. It didn't look like it was up for the battle at the start of the season, and it's proved it. That's proved to be the case all the way through the season.
Yeah, I think the whole nature of the Premier League and trying to compete now, because you have to build a completely different side now to survive in the Premier League. Because if you go up with a look at the great Championship sides from last season, everyone would easily say Burnley and Leicester played some of the best football in the league last season. They've gone up and they're out of the depth.
Struggling, yeah.
Even QPR, who I didn't think had a great season last year, but again, they're out of their depth as well. And you have to build your team, and you have to bring in these expensive players that aren't necessarily good Championship players. Like, you know, QPR, if they come down, they're going to have the likes of Rio Ferdinand, Taraps, people like that. They're not going to dig out of a hole. And what happens is you have this massive turnover. Some players that you just can't get rid of, so you can't rebuild the side you want to, and it can go so quickly wrong.
I think a lot of it is attitude as well. I think if you come down to the Championship with the wrong attitude, and I think that does happen to a lot of teams that drop out of the Premier League, where either they think they've got a divine right to be Premier League footballers, or they're just not, some of them are just mercenaries, let's face it, and they're not interested in playing Championship football. I don't know how QPR got promoted last year, because I thought they had a team full of mercenaries. It was only when Barton come back and put in a few decent stints that they sort of pushed themselves into a position to go up. But they just, I think too many teams come down now with a wrong attitude, and that's why they struggled the season after.
Yeah, no, completely agree. And I said, having quality Premier League quality players will get you higher in the league, because they've just got that ability. But it's when they need to muck in, and it's especially in that second season once, because you can dangle the carrot of saying, you know, look lads, we'll go straight back up and it'll be fine. But if you get off to a bad start,
Heads drop very quickly.
Heads drop, and players suddenly start looking, oh, how far away is January? Surely I'm... Do I want to be associated with this team that's doing well? Because my stock's going to drop if I'm playing in a...
This is I think there's a problem with football in this country in general. I think you've got too many players now that get too much too soon and just have the wrong attitude about playing football, or their desire to do well.
Yeah, And that's why Reading have historically always gone for these young, hungry players from the lower leagues.
I think it's the only way, really. Yeah. You need some quality, but you need players like when Coppell was here that were young and hungry and wanted to do well. And look what happened to them. Once they went up and their attitude changed, then we slipped back down the league again.
Yeah. So, good one. Good one. Thanks for that, Mark. So, that could have been a pub chat all on its own. Ben Print. What would improve facilities at Medeski Stadium? Green Park train station, pub nearby, pedestrian walkway over the A33, or anything else?
All of the above.
Yeah. Don't think any of those would be a bad thing. I would notice that the Green Park station moved a step closer, although I think it's moved
a step closer
and a step back for ever since the whole stadium was built. So we'll wait and see for that one.
It's an expensive project.
Yeah.
I would have thought.
A pub nearby would be brilliant. I don't think it's going to happen.
No, I think they're doing their best with that. They are. They've got the good old boy outside now.
Yeah, that's good.
Obviously, you've got the hotel and you've got the jazz bar, so I can't see it happening.
I like the band that's popped up by the good old boy West Berkshire Brewery thing.
I thought it's a good idea, especially sort of at the start of the season when it's nice and sunny. Everyone would love to stand out there with a real hour in the hand.
Yeah, it was very popular before the Bradford game. I don't know what would improve facilities, really. I think they do pretty well. I know the cash point would be handy because he wants to get a massive queue for that one.
A cash point would be very handy, yeah.
Yeah.
And also, cut this 15 minutes having to wait in your car for where everyone moves. You know what I mean? Wait for the buses to go. Just let people go. It'd be fine.
Yeah, I think you're always going to struggle with traffic, though, when you've got 20 up to 20,000 people trying to get away from the same place at once.
Yeah, but it doesn't help. They get kept there for 20 minutes.
No, it doesn't. So, don't know about a pedestrian walkway. I think this... fairly safe and easy to walk.
Just griping now, let's face it.
Ben also goes on to say, are you secretly hoping Swindon get promoted so we can resurrect that rivalry? There's nothing secret about it. I want them to go out just so we can send them packing again.
Yeah, great. More closer rivals, the better.
It's been, I think, 13 years since we played either Oxford or Swindon.
I know. Are they really our rivals, though? Are they really? I don't know.
I don't know. I remember in my early days of supporting the club, they used to be good fixtures. I remember Stuart Lovell smashing a hat-trick against Swindon on a glorious sunny day.
I think when I was a kid, it was Aldershot that used to be our closest rivals.
Steve Claridge.
Yeah.
Turning out. I having a local derby is always a good thing to go. Just having different teams to play against.
Nice little full house and a decent atmosphere. So, yeah.
Yeah. Jacob South-Klein says, who are you tipping to end up as Reading's top goal scorer this season? Pavan Mackie making late pushes to overtake Coxie Babes. That's his words, not mine.
I think at recent form, probably, I think Pavel's got a few more goals than Mackie already, and you'd probably say Podgorevniak.
Yeah.
If Podgorevniak was on penalties, he'd probably be our top goal scorer already.
Yeah. I'll go for Pav as well. Lord CKS says, he may be a nice guy, but would you offer Karachan a new deal? By all accounts, way off the pace Saturday. Not for me.
Yeah, but I can't. You can't judge him on that one match when you've had a year out.
No.
I think this season is just, let's get him fit for next season. I did say at the start of the season you'd be lucky to see him, and you've seen him, but it's a shadow of the former player, and I think Karachan, he wears his heart on his sleeve, and he is one of those players that's got a bit of desire, and you can't judge him on a one game.
He needs to stay fit. If he has another breakdown this season, that's it. He's gone. Yeah. He needs to stay fit and... being training every week, busting the gut. Not expecting him to do miracles on the pitch, but just proving his fitness and proving he can stay fit would be massive.
If he can get 4 or 5 games under his belt before the end of the season and have a pre-season, then he'll come back to the old carriage.
And we've discussed this before. Gem has an option written into his current deal that the club have the power to execute, but given the wage that he obviously signed a contract when we're in the Premier League, I imagine those terms are very favourable to Gem. I can't see the club taking up that option.
No.
What I can see them doing
is renegotiate
and offering him a deal that protects the club because money's going to be tight. Mm-hmm. Parachute payments are going down this summer. Despite the FA Cup run and the new ownership, let's not get carried away. We're not going to splash the cash.
No, and the great news for Reading is Karachan is not in a strong position to be negotiating good deals.
He says he wants to stay. He said he's waiting to hear what the club have to offer. And I said they'll certainly make an offer, but it just depends if Karachan's prepared to gamble, take a shorter deal. I said maybe you even just sign a 1-year deal. And he says, okay, I'll sign this at lower terms. And then suddenly the power's back in his hands if he has a good season.
Well, they might say to him, sign a 1-year deal and there'd be an option of a second, depending if you play 15 games or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right, teased this one earlier. Ollie says, if it weren't for the cup run, would we be calling this one of the worst seasons of Reading's recent history?
Definitely.
100%. It's our worst season of the millennium.
Yeah, we've been lucky over the last 15, 20 years that we've always been there or thereabouts, and there's been something to play for, even if it's relegation. But there's always been something to look forward to or sort of look at. But this year, league-wise, it's just been poor all season. They've been dreadful. Most of the season, they've been dreadful, let's face it. It's only the FA Cup, like I said, just closed our eyes to our league form.
I think we've conceded 3 goals or more, I think 10 times this season.
Yeah, and we've not scored freely either, really.
No. It's been bad. The style of football's been bad. The level of individual performances have been bad.
They're just not a team.
No, the atmosphere at the stadium's been bad. It's just bad. I can't use that. I wish I could think of a better word, but I've been up for too long. Mm-hmm. it's just awful. And everyone's just desperate to get through it. It's like a marathon now. You've broken the back of it. And you can see the finish line and everything's hurting. You just want to get there.
You've hit the wall, let's face it.
You've hit the wall. Steve Clarke himself, you can tell in his post-match press, he is desperate to get to May.
Yeah.
And just thank God for this cup run, because if it wasn't for this, it would be a miserable end.
Yeah, and it definitely needs freshening up next year. And I think there's no doubt that will happen.
Yeah. The annoying thing as well is you can't even say, well, let's get on a good run to start next season, because I said half the squad aren't going to be here.
No.
So...
And the ones that are, I've got an eye on FA Cup anyway, so...
Yeah, you're literally just hoping to claw those few points, get yourself safe, and then hope against hope you pull off something great against Arsenal.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in fact, I'm planning a piece in the summer for the website looking at what is our worst season since we moved to the Middlesbrough Stadium.
And don't forget, the last time we won a cup, we got relegated from the same league.
Yes. Let's not remember that. So,
but it's the thing, no one really remembers we got relegated. I just remember we won the Simov Cup.
Yeah, true. Official Ricaldo. Does it look like any loan signings will come in before Thursday, and who would you want? I'm going to say no. I wouldn't rule out a striker. I still think we're a little light. And I think some insurance... Because let's talk about Yakubu, Westy, because apart from that goal against Derby,
he's really been
awful.
He's not exactly set the world alight, has he?
He has played 5 times for us in the league. We have lost 5 times.
Yeah.
And we have scored 1 goal with him on the pitch.
And he's not looked like scoring a goal. No, I think it was an experiment that hasn't worked out for either party at the moment.
Yeah. I would like to see a striker. In fact, there's a pretty good striker who's banging in the goals for Coventry at the moment that Reading could bring
his
back.
His name Samuel, is it?
Yeah, I think so. He scored again at the weekend.
I don't understand why they haven't brought him back.
I think you bring him back now.
Yeah, you might as well. He's got to be in their plans next year. He's scoring goals. Why wouldn't he be?
Yeah, I don't think Coventry will be keen to let him go, but I think you just start playing him now.
Yeah, it's either that or it's a good time to sell him, because I don't know what his contract's like.
That happened this summer,
left.
I think.
But again, maybe he won't want to come back then. Probably Coventry will offer him a deal.
We'll see. I wouldn't rule out Steve Clarke going for a strike. I think that would be the only area, but again, I think the club are financially not in the best position.
It's just strikers are a premium, and you ain't going to get one this time of the season.
I remember they got Benikophobe, didn't they, around this time in the run-in.
Yeah. Look how well he's done since.
Yeah, done very well.
Very well.
Well, he was really highly tipped when he came to Reading. He didn't get that many games to show what he could do.
But he was playing on a wing as well. Now he's playing up front, so...
So, yeah, maybe a lone striker, but apart from that, and even then, I'd say there's a 5, 10% chance of that happening.
It won't happen. He's obviously got Zach Knight here to cover the back four, and that'll be it.
Fantastic. If you had said at the start of the season, Zach Knight and Anton Ferdinand at Reading.
And Yakubu.
Oh, God. We go from signing these bright, hungry young prospects like Kevin Doyle and Shane Long to getting Yakubu, Zach Knight and Anton Ferdinand. And you wonder why the club is going in the wrong direction.
Young and hungry. Not.
Well, Yak's hungry.
Yeah, clearly, very.
And apparently he's quite young.
Yeah, what,
32 years old, Westy.
I don't think he knows.
He's got years in the game.
No, it's years yet. Another 5, get out of him at least.
Right, anyway. Darren Collins. What are the odds on Reading's Championship survival? # gamble aware and probably # drink aware. Well, no. I did a piece on this today. The bookies had Reading at 25-1 to get relegated. And that was after the weekend's results. And I think that reflects it.
Yeah, I think it tells you pretty much all we need to know. They shouldn't get relegated. They probably won't.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't a promotion race where teams below you are winning games. This is a relegation race where teams have been struggling to win all season. And to see the likes of Millwall and Wigan suddenly turn around, and it's not just that they have to win the points to get level with Reading. They have to pick up points after that. Because Reading are going to their way into some results.
They've probably got to win 5 games and draw 1.
Wigan and Millwall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To guarantee...
Out of what, 8, 9 games?
Yeah, I can't see it happening. How are you going to turn that form around in the space of that short amount of time?
I don't think it's going to be... I don't think it's going to be a comfortable survival.
I don't want to be some nerve-jangling last day of the season with three points clear, a worse goal difference.
Oh, God. I think we've got... is it Derby we've got on the last day of the season as well?
Yeah.
And Bournemouth in the last couple of weeks. Oh, God.
They might be in party mode with a bit of luck.
Well, we said that about Burnley.
Yeah, look what happened.
Exactly. I think they're going to be fine, Darren. I wouldn't worry.
Come back to us in 4 weeks and we'll give you a lowdown on it.
Yeah, actually, it's, you know, looking at our prediction skills, maybe you should put...
Worried.
Right, that wraps up the mailbag. So thank you to all those who've got in touch. At the Tireless End is the Twitter, thetirelessend@gmail.com for the email, and facebook.com/thetirelessend is our Facebook. We'll be back to wrap this up with any other business.
The Tirelhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetirelhurstend.com.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. We're not going to preview the next set of Championship games because...
We'll leave that.
Yeah, quite frankly, it's 2 weeks away and what's the point? A lot can change in that. So
give us time to reflect on it.
Indeed. So, but let's look back on the past Championship games in terms of the Prediction League. And Westy...
Oh, hello.
You got one right.
I'm on my way. I told you I was going to win this.
For the first time since the win at Norwich.
And no one predicted that other than
me. You've got one right. So you took 3 points for predicting Watford would beat us 4-1.
That was a nice price. Gamble away.
It was, yeah. All of us actually got the game cast right on that. All of us predicted a Watford win. None of us particularly confident for that one. But yeah, you got the score correct. Just pipping poor Charles. He needed those points. So you've pulled 3 points clear of him now.
Yes.
At the bottom. Work to catch me and Johnny, though. I lead on 24. Johnny's closed the gap to a single point. He's the only one that correctly predicted that Charlton would beat Reading. He said a 2-1 win. Charlton obviously winning 3-2. He's on 23 points. Westy, you're on 16. And Charles is languishing from 13.
What is our point system? Is it three for...
Three for a correct one. Okay, yeah. And one for the if you get the result of the game, right?
Yeah. Can we have double points round at the end?
No. Absolutely not. Well, Charles is saying he's made a couple of good cup predictions this year that have gone well. And he's clamouring for those to be included.
He's doing what Reading are doing. He's concentrating too much on the cup, isn't he?
Yeah. It does go to show, though, how... Because, look, we're not super pundits here. There's a reason why we're not mega rich.
You speak for yourself.
But when you look at our prediction league this season, it is amazing how we just get so many results wrong. And I don't think that we've been making outlandish predictions.
No. I think, what obviously, the listeners can't see this, but if it's wrong, it's in red. And if it's right, it's in blue. And if it's spot on, it's in green.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of red on that
screen.
There
is a lot of red.
Hell of a lot. And considering most weeks, or pretty much all weeks, we never do the same score, any of us.
Yeah.
We've been wrong a hell of a lot.
I think they've just been, you know, people at work are talking to me about putting Reading in accumulators. I'm just saying, stay as far away from Reading as you can.
You can't touch Reading in accumulator.
You can't, because they'll go and win at someone like an Ipswich, and then they'll lose at home to an awful side.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's...
To Leeds or Wigan.
Beat Norwich and lose away to Charlton.
We've got 6 points off Norwich and Ipswich this year.
Again, ironic.
And yet we've got nothing out of Huddersfield.
It's ridiculous. Where we get Wigan, 1 point, do we, away from home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul.
Bonkers. Anyway, all to play for as we head into the final weeks of the season. I'll update the spreadsheet for the next Championship games a bit closer to it. As I said, we won't be recording next week for two reasons. Number one, it's International Week, and as much as I'd love to dissect England's games, I'd rather put pins in my eyes. And also, I'm away on my stag do.
Hey, where you going?
Benidorm.
Oh, nice. Week.
So we're going on Sunday and we're back on Thursday.
All right. What you should do is the after stag do podcast. That'd be more interesting than some of the
Stagcast.
The dross we've been piling out over the last couple of months.
Well, I like to think it'd be more entertaining than a lot of the Reading games and podcasts we've put out this year.
Maybe.
But we'll see how that goes. Just a couple of other bits and pieces to round up. I said, please head over to tylesn.com. Lots of great content going up. I said, especially Raw Hoops' piece, well worth a read. And finally, mugs, Westy.
Oh, mugs.
I teased the mugs. And basically what I decided to do is, because I'm not a professional businessman, I'm barely professional at anything I do. Mm. Anyone that listens to this podcast will know that. So what I decided to do was auction them off to try and raise a bit of funds for the coffers, so we can afford to buy things like a better microphone, for example, for this podcast and other things. So the auctions will run, I think they run until the early hours of tomorrow.
eBay?
They are on eBay. There are 3 mugs up for bidding at the moment. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have said, I'd really like to get my hands on a mug. I can't really afford the price that they're going up to. At the moment, we're just going to see how these auctions go, and then we're going to take it from there. I said, I don't know if... I've got the professional nous to be constantly packaging up.
You sure you didn't misread this tweet? I'd really like to get my hands on that
yeah,
mug.
Quite.
You sure it wasn't after it didn't say Johnny Williams?
It's easy to make fun because he's not here.
That's it. That's why we're making fun.
I haven't even mentioned the fact that Johnny's not here. He's just been really quiet.
Yeah, he's still seething about Atkins.
Indeed. Angry Johnny this week. So go and bid on the mugs. As I said, people have asked if we will be doing another run of them. I can't tell you for sure. Hopefully we will. But again, it'll possibly be in the summer. I can't promise anything. Or what I would say is if you do really want to get your hands on one of them. So there's three up for auction now. And you can do that. There's also a competition up on the website as well.
Ooh.
Where you can run an Art of Football tee. They've done a really nice t-shirt commemorating Reading's run to the semi-finals. It's a great image of all the players celebrating after one of the goals against Bradford.
Yep.
And we've got one to give away for free. Oh. All you've got to do is go to thetalhurstend.com, log in, and leave a comment on the article in question about an FA Cup memory you've got.
Oh, okay.
So it can be a couple of sentences, it can be a few paragraphs, as long or short as you want. We'll then judge it as a panel about which one that made us smile or cringe the most.
Pick the best.
And we'll pick the best. And as I said, anyone can enter. Literally, all you've got to do is log in. If you haven't joined the site yet, you can log in with your Facebook details, with your Twitter details. It takes less time than it took you to download this podcast. So, and as I said, you can win a free T-shirt. There's not been that many entries yet, so you stand a good chance of winning it.
Mm-hmm.
So, chip in there. And that's us done. Charles is actually off this week as well. He's on his jolly holidays.
I think Mr. Fordham used to do pretty much the same sort of thing.
He used to go skiing all the time, didn't he?
He did. I actually noticed one of his articles this week in The Mirror about Reading, ironically.
No, well, there you go. Big time Fordham.
It's a bit like Jason Roberts now. He sort of, when Reading are playing, he turns up in a studio. Yeah, it's a bit like that still.
Well, Charles is away this week, so there's not going to be a podcast extra either. So chances are the next time you'll hear this is a podcast extra. I'm hoping that I'll sit down with Charles the day after I get back from said stag do. Should I get back from said stag do? So that'll be the next time you'll hear this podcast. And said in the meantime, you can go back and listen to some of the archive. Go back and listen to the Simon Osborne interview. Yeah. Or the John Halls one.
Yeah.
All the big names.
Yeah, all the big names on this show.
All the big names. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully with Johnny on board as well, to look ahead to the big one.
Wait.
Arsenal,
yeah. Oh, the wedding, remember?
Yeah, we're doing wedding preview.
The wedding.
We'll preview my speech.
Yeah, that could be a good idea,
actually. Fashion tips.
You can get people to put stuff in, take stuff out, mix it up.
Get a betting preview about, will I fall over?
Gambling aware.
Yeah, who will make a fool of themselves on the dance floor?
Drink aware.
Everything aware that you can think of. But we've been rambling on. As I said, thank you very much to Simon Shepherd for giving us his time for the interview. Go bid on those mugs. Stay tuned to thetalhurstend.com for plenty more updates. And subscribe in iTunes. Had to get that one in there. That's us done. Go on, you Rs. Take care. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how they always leave a trail. You smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. People wear the tears and it's running out of town. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile. Funny how the crowds
Talhurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans, for Reading fans.